Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Annie Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 30th, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And man, are we excited today.
Yes, we have a very special guest.
Scott's all reserved.
Well, I'm always in awe when Joe Navarro is in the studio, and I'm being reserved because the longer we have him in the studio, the more chance he has to pick up on a tell on me, and I'm not going to give him that opportunity.
The good thing is he's turned down every invitation we've ever had to have him at the home game. So if he ever actually takes us up on it, then we'll be in trouble. But I notice you have your sunglasses on your head, too. I'm sure you'll be putting them down over your eyes.
Even though Joe doesn't think the eyes tell as much information as the other parts of it, I'm not taking any chances today.
So what we're going to do today is we're going to get through the normal segments, but we have some stuff that we're going to put on hold for a week because we want to spend as much time with Joe as we can. So
a lot of great questions.
If you were tuning in for that all-important hotline clip, I'm sorry, it's not going to be played today. We're going to postpone it for a week. So if you were calling up being a wise ass on the phone thinking you're going to make the show, you're going to have to tune in next week.
For wise ass day.
That's National Wise Ass Day, by the way.
Well, speaking of wise asses, this wise ass, yours truly, finished 4th in Apes on Saturday.
That's awesome.
Mostly because you weren't there. That's what the consensus was.
It's got to be it, because otherwise you would have been all spazzed out trying to beat me, and then you wouldn't have concentrated on your game.
It also helped that we only had 36 people. Apparently, a Saturday afternoon, that crowd that's been clamoring for it has other things to do on Saturday now.
Well, I had a friend in from out of town. Otherwise, I'd have been there, definitely. So that was why I wasn't there, and I thought I'd say, well, this gives Scott his one chance to actually win one of our tournaments. Didn't happen. Sorry, buddy, but you did good, though. You made the final table.
I got close. Got fourth.
So what happened? I heard there was a huge heads-up.
Well, finale. It was very interesting at the end, and particularly interesting for me, too, because I got short-stacked early. And, of course, people said, you know, I'll come back. And I did. Doubled up and then made a run. And the final table was a lot of folks that we remember. Godard, Colombo was there, and a couple other regulars, and then one interloper.
Huh.
He got under the fence, Chris. Even in that restricted free roll that we did, he got under the fence.
How did that happen?
And he had massive chips. And I was happy when I got knocked out in fourth and he was left. I'm like, oh, please, please let Colombo or Godard win this thing.
Yeah, I don't even know what the postage is to Brazil.
Yeah. Let's not find out either. So I got up, got some lunch, came back, and he was gone.
Excellent.
So I don't know who took him out, but it was a great heads-up match between Colombo and Godard, and Godard actually brought it down.
Very nice.
And he had some advice on how he did it, and he called in.
Hey, guys. It's Godard, after 4 years of listening to your podcast, finally won a tournament, the Six Max, one of my worst games, but I owe it all to you guys and the promotion of winning poker tournaments one hand at a time. Read the entire book, fresh in my mind, and used a lot of the strategies, and it worked. Wasn't my usual wimpy self, and managed to take down Colombo. It was a really tough match. Loved it, thrilled, and loved the apes, and congrats to Scott also for making the money.
See, proof that people actually can learn from Ante Up. It's really hard.
Usually it's
gotta
learn the wrong things and do the opposite.
Right, yeah. You got to look for that little nut that fell off the tree somewhere in the show to help you out.
Kind of like George Costanza, you know, he would do the opposite of his first instincts and ends up being like president of the Yankees. All right, well, our next event, May 12th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, No Limit Hold'em. And the free roll will be May 5th, and you and I will be out of town.
Yes, we will be in Biloxi then, so we will probably be not trying to get that free money, but who knows?
Never know.
Yeah, probably won't, though.
Hey, you know, here comes your newest favorite segment. We decided to keep this segment in because it's Scott's favorite. And, you know, if you get rid of it 1 week too early when you first introduce something, that people will forget about it.
Yeah, so you got to build momentum.
You got to build momentum with it. So we're going to keep feedback in, and then we'll move on to our one-minute mystery. So what happened in the feedback this week?
Well, we got a great letter. This is one of the all-time best letters, I think, that we've gotten from Michael Cantor. He was the guy that sent the mailbag in for last week. Or actually, it was recently on the big mailbag show we did.
Right, right.
And, of course, he sent this email a year ago to us, all right? I mean, he's been holding on to it. He'd had his swag already. We were just waiting for the feedback show. So we did. We talked about, you know, he was asking about what to do when you're in a funk.
Right.
And taking a break, right?
Right, exactly.
So this is what he wrote back. He's like, hey, I just heard my letter read on the mailbag issue, the last one, about taking a break from poker. I wrote that about a year ago. Oops. And I have to say that taking a break really turned out well. While not playing for about 3 months, I was able to finish 50 pages of a screenplay that he eventually finished in the fall, using playing a sit-and-go as a reward for finishing his quota for the day. So there you go.
Yeah.
A little carrot for your poker. And let's just say that our daughter was born about 9 months from the middle of the break.
Gee, I wonder what he was doing on the break.
Well played, Michael. I hope you got to play a sit-and-go after that. He said he appreciated the game much more when he came back and even had a decent showing when he went to play live at the Borgata in June. So even though the advice was almost a year late, it's definitely worth taking.
Now, what's worth taking? The advice or the break? Because I think our advice was, like, play different games. He played different games already.
No, I think we said to take a break. Come on, you know, we got credit in the apes, and now we're getting credit in the feedback. You know, of course, it helps that I'm putting together the whole show, so, you know, I leave out all the criticism. But
man, a lot of milestones in this show today. A lot of milestones. The biggest one, of course, now is we're going to skip everything here and go right to our one-minute mystery. This is the 100th one-minute mystery from Colombo. Now, of course, we all remember he started out with the Lord Admiral Card Club and then migrated over to us when they gave up, you know, the grind of what we do. haven't missed a week in, I don't know, ever. Missed a week in the show. I'm sure that he's doing really well, and 100 episodes. We're real excited for him. And apparently this is a big hand. It's going to be called The Case of the World's Biggest Hand.
Yeah, they don't get any bigger than that, do they?
So for the 100th episode.
Maybe the universe's biggest hand.
Hey, you know, I learned the hard way that the universe and the world are the same thing.
Really?
And I will prove it to you later.
You're not going
to
make me watch the sci-fi channel.
No, but I got into a huge fight with my wife over it, so I'll tell that story some other time.
We never win when we get in huge fights with the wives.
But in honor of Colombo, let's listen to his 100th episode, The Case of the World's Biggest Hand.
Greetings, this is Colombo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is the 100th one-minute mystery, The Case of the World's Biggest Hand. It's very, very late in an online multi-table tournament. So late, in fact, that of the 1,800 runners, just 45 remain. The blind level is 2,500, 5,000, with an ante of 600.
Sir? Sir, could I have a moment of your time?
We are playing for a minimum of 13K in chips each rotation. Stack sizes at the table range from 93K to 250K. Except for us. We have 434K and are currently second overall in chips.
So far, it's the results of hard work.
We are at a full table of 9 when the first 3 players fold and we peak at Jack of Diamonds, Jack of Hearts. We're going to stay consistent here and raise it up 2.5 big blind to 12-5, and then watch the hijack fold and the cutoff raise us to 40K. The button folds, the blinds fold, and it comes back around to us, and we need some time to think about this.
I'm thinking about it, sir.
There are a maximum number of options here, all with merit. We could just chuck the jacks, we could re-raise and risk 100K and see if he's ready to go to the wall with his hand, or we can call and see what the flop tells us. I call the 27-5. The pot is 93K and we see a flop of 4 of spades, 4 of diamonds, 3 of diamonds. I lead out for 50K, leaving 344K behind. but my opponent then pushes his remaining 206K into the pot.
Well, I know you're busy, and I took up enough of your time already. Just one more thing.
What do you think he has, and what are you going to do?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
It gives me great pleasure to bring back one of Anti-Up's, if not the most favorite guest of the Anti-Up Nation.
Oh, I think it's without a doubt.
Without a doubt. Well, you know, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings either, you know. But our friend Joe Navarro, our columnist, our friend, our dodger of home games, is back in the studio with us today. He has a new book coming out. We're real excited about that. And we want to talk to him today and see what he's been up to. So, Joe, thanks a lot for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Well, it's great to be here. And this nonsense about not wanting to play with you guys, it's true. Nothing personal, but I've seen you too, and it's just a little bit too intense.
You know, Joe calls me up this morning, and he's like, "Hey, you guys at the studio already?" I said, "No, man, we're leaving in a little while." He says,
"Well, we're prima donnas. We roll right in start time."
He's like, "All right, well, I just want to let you know though, I'm only in a sport jacket." I was like, "Joe, sometimes I show up at the studio in a Speedo."
Right. So at that point, I'm heading for a car wash, rolling down every orifice on my car so I can get cleaned also.
You shouldn't have said orifice there. I really don't think you should have said that.
That's the point. That's the visual. Thus my pain.
Needless to say, he skipped lunch, by the way.
Yeah, I'm on a diet now. Hey, it's really good to be here, and actually it's been too long. I love the magazine. I love the stuff that you guys do on the air, and it's a pleasure to be here with both of you.
Oh, shucks. Now we're blushing. All right. Well, Joe, you got a new book. Yeah, we'll talk to you about that in a minute here. But what else besides the book have you been up to? You've been a traveling fool, it sounds like.
I have been a traveling fool. Okay. Message to all, do not go to Europe when the volcanoes are spewing, because that 1-hour flight turned into an 18-hour ordeal.
Oh, man. Yeah. Now, were you able to pick up on the nonverbal communication from the angry passengers there? Did that help you pass the time a little bit?
Yeah. There was a lot of tells at the airport, and a lot of them were indicated with just one finger.
How about the volcano? Did you get any disturbances from the volcano? Did you know it was going to erupt before you went over there?
The only disturbances we got were from the children at the airport.
Oh, well, that's great. I'm sure all of our listeners know who Joe Navarro is, but just in case you don't, we'll just refresh you. Spent, more than 25 years in the FBI, counterterrorism, specializing in nonverbal tells. He came out and wrote a fabulous groundbreaking book on poker tells and nonverbal communication. And since then has been on the teaching circuit and still does a lot of poker training. And but he does nonverbal communication in other arenas as well, too. And his newest book, Louder Than Words, is out now, and it's a focus on the workplace, right, Joe?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning all of that, but this one was based on some of the lectures that I had given at various business schools, and they kept saying, well, you know, you wrote one for the poker players, and you wrote one for everybody else. What about us in business? So I put that together with Tony Shara. And it's actually being used by some the Harvard Business School. So I'm very, very, very pleased.
I've heard that's a pretty good school.
You know what? It's not Tampa, but it's up there.
Well, here's the thing, Joe. I want to ask you. You know, obviously our show is about poker, and our folks tune in to hear about poker. But you know, after looking through the book, I have to think that this book might actually be more valuable to a lot of our listeners than Read 'Em and Reap, because they all have, most of our listeners have 9-to-5 jobs, and while they like to make money in poker, I mean, the biggest thing is getting advanced in the career and not making mistakes and things like that.
Wait, I thought that only poker pros listen to our show. You're telling me that they're like average blue-collar guys?
Hey, we all know that poker pros have side jobs. They just don't like to admit it.
Yeah. It's only Greg Raymer with a big antenna pointed at you. Let me bring you guys back to reality. Actually, Scott, you've got a good point. And one of the things that I've heard over the years from poker players is this. You know, it's, hey, I can use this outside of poker.
Yeah.
And, the benefit of a book like this is not only do you see the stuff at work, but the same stuff, all the tells you see at work, you're going to see in the poker room. The advantage of learning to observe outside of the poker room is when you come to the poker table, you don't even have to think about what you're seeing. It's like software running in the background.
I noticed in the book this time, too, you got away from photos and you used these really cool sort of pencil sketches. Who did those sketches and why did you go that way? Was it easier to make it happen with an artist rather than having somebody capture it on film?
No, it's just because my skin was getting older. And you can only, Photoshop only allows you to do so much.
Yeah, yeah.
It comes to the point where the little sign pops up and says, "We do not do magic." No, what happened was the HarperCollins said, in the business sector, they actually prefer line drawings. So Tony Shara's husband, who's a renowned artist in New York, agreed to do it. Donald did this for us, and it's fabulous. He just did an exceptional job of really the subtle nuances of body language.
I guess that explains the little photo sigs in the Wall Street Journal.
Yes.
Why they're drawn on instead of taking photos, because the business sector enjoys line drawing.
That's true. Yeah. They're scared to see real photos.
And learn something new every day.
Get out.
And Joe, I noticed you spared no expense in hiring pretty models for your book, too. All the drawings appeared to be almost of you.
Yeah, I dragged my secretary back in front of the camera and said, you are going to get photographed for this shoot. And actually she's great about it. She's actually the secretary for all the criminology professors at St. Leo University, and she's quite a sport. I approached her and I said, "Now we need for you to make faces," and she just sort of said, "Yeah, okay."
I want to know. This is what this is your third book, right?
This is my third book with HarperCollins. This is actually my my fifth published book.
Yep. Okay, so you've written five books. You do a column for Bluff. You do you answer questions for us, and we'll probably get some columns out of you pretty soon too. Do you tired of the writing? And has it ever become like when I was on the sports desk in my old job? I'm actually not really much of a sports fan anymore because I just burned out on it. I mean, I'll enjoy watching the Yankees once in a while or something like that. But do you burn out on this? Do you ever tire of it? Does it keep you sharp and you enjoy it?
To be honest, I haven't tired of it, and I think it keeps me sharp, and that's why and both of you know that I encourage the readers to send in questions because it makes me think. It makes me go out and say, what? That's a great question. Now let's do the research, or let me go back out there and take a look at it and dissect it. And in fact, as a result of people coming in with questions, when I wrote the first book with Phil Hellmuth, we looked at maybe around 82 tells. Right now I'm working on another poker book for the future. I'm already past 200 tells.
Wow. There
we go.
Wow.
That's huge.
And a lot of it is based on, hey, somebody asked a question and it just pushes me to look further to see what's there. You know, will I get burnt out? Well, who knows? But but you know, right now this is still pretty interesting for me.
That's great. Well, that's a great segue into our questions from our listeners. But I did want to ask you. I want to congratulate you on your recent nuptials.
That's right.
Very good. And how are things going in the married life?
Well,
I noticed you dedicated your book to your wife.
Yeah. You know, one of the things you learn early on, and gentlemen, draw closer. Happy wife, happy life. And that's all I'll say. Is that okay, honey? Okay.
Well, as one wise man once said to me, welcome to the institution.
No, actually, life is great. Life is great. So what's the first question?
All right, you're up, Chris.
All right, this comes from Brad all the way in Sydney, Australia. He says, do you think that some poker players are born with the skill of intuition for spotting tells while others aren't?
I think definitely so. I've worked with guys, for instance, Daniel Negreanu, who has an unbelievable ability to look at things and draw inferences from them that leave me floored and leave most people just knowing that they're in a different league. Knowing that, however, I know this. We can all improve our ability to observe and our ability to pick up on tells. It's just a matter of being taught. I mean, if I taught you, for instance, that when you put your hands on top of your cards, the distance between each finger will be dominated by how you feel about your card, so that when you're strong, your fingers will be further apart than when you're weak. Now, having that knowledge, which, by the way, is accurate, now you know what to look for. Now you can, internalize that and use that in your gameplay. And by the way, that's going to be in my new book.
Wow, Arcus, so you're saying that direct correlation with how far apart you spread your fingers will indicate how strong or weak your hand is?
Yeah, exactly. When we're strong, we tend to spread out, our fingers spread out. When we're weak, we tend to withdraw it. In the same way that if you have a cat or a dog, when they feel threatened, they tuck in their ears. Well, our brain tucks in the fingers together so that they're not spread apart.
So all the more reason to buy a card protector, right?
Or just chop your hands off. Which is using?
Yeah, or sit on your hands. No, all the more reason to become a better observer. Once, you know, it was a great question. Yeah, some people innately get a sense of things, but if you can dissect the body and know what to look for, you can become an exceptional observer and thus an exceptional poker player.
Now, do you see this in some of your live training that you have folks that say, hey, I'm just not good at picking up on this, and they kind of shut down?
Yeah, at the WSOP Academy where I do most of my teaching, I spend a lot of time with the players, and you know, people come in and they say, "Well, you know, I'm not a very good observer and I'm not this." And so my first question is, "Well, how many hours have you devoted to observing?" And they look at me like, you know, I left a smelly one behind. And you guys have seen me at Caesars. I'll spend 2 or 3 hours watching tables learning. And so one of the things I find is a lot of poker players immediately go right in and they want to play, but they don't spend a lot of time observing. And at some point you have to say, you know what, I've got to devote myself to at least watching and observing so I can try to learn, and it won't cost me anything.
All right, our next question comes from Matt Moody. He wants to know, what is the most important thing you tell amateur, quote, trying to become pro poker players to do to improve their overall ability to correctly read tells?
Number one is read everything that you can to better your knowledge. You know, when my book came out with Phil Hellmuth, Read 'Em and Reap, people said, oh, so is this the book to read? No, this is a contribution to the literature. You want to look and see what Mike Caro has to say. You want to see what Annie Duke has to say. You want to see what all the pros have to say and build on that. But if you're going to play and you're going to be serious about it, you've got to educate yourself. You just cannot leave these things to chance, because I know, having taught many a pro, they don't leave anything to chance.
Well, and Joe, I want to mention this real quick. We talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago, but since you're here, I thought you'd be interested to hear it. We had TJ Cloutier on our Antioch Poker Cruise, and he made a point during one of his training sessions to say the only training seminar that he's gone to in the last 40 years that he's taken notes at was your seminar.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because as both of you know, when the first seminar I went to, I didn't know any of the players. Phil Hellmuth had invited me, and I didn't know about TJ Cloutier, but I noticed he was in the front row taking notes, and I thought it was weird. You know, here's this older gentleman taking notes on what I have to say. And then someone said to me, oh, by the way, he's one of the world's greatest poker players. And so it was an honor for me to be with him and then later to also teach classes with him. He's a fascinating fellow.
And you know, it's funny because with me watching poker on television a lot and then all of our appearances with you, and I get that a lot from the pros. On television, you see them talking about you. Like in Poker After Dark, on more than one occasion, I hear the pros saying, Yeah, that, Joe Navarro, blah, 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 or I was working with him, or he was talking about it, And how does that feel? I mean, here you are, you were in the FBI, all of a sudden, boom, you found out, hey, this knowledge I have can translate to that. And all of a sudden, you're like a celebrity among celebrities. I mean, really, how does that make you feel?
To be honest, I don't even think about it because I just got an extension on my taxes. So it's like, come on, guys. I'm not even thinking about it. It's very nice. The other day, Jennifer Tilly contacted me and she says, I hope you don't mind, but I mentioned you and so forth. And it's an honor. I mean, it's a real honor because when you're around pros, you realize that they're several of orders of magnitude higher than the average person in their knowledge. They are truly into the game. They're into the nuances of the game, the statistics, and they really want to learn. And so to hear that from them, it's very kind. But, I mean, for me, it's still a challenge to try to learn more and more about tells and body language and so forth. So to me, the excitement is in discovering new things that we can talk about here.
Well, could you do me a favor too? We had Jen Tilly all lined up to be on the show, and then she retired, and now she's come back and she won't take my phone calls. So we need to get her on the show. We want to get her in the magazine. She won't answer my email. So after the show, give her a buzz. Say, look, these guys are real good. We need to be on their show. Just, do what you do. All right? Because, I know you badgered the witnesses and all that. Badger her for us. Get her on the show, will you?
I can't even believe I'm listening to this. Oh, yeah. Because I live by the 24 edict.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying you waterboarded anyone. I'm just saying, coerce her a little bit, will you?
I never even shot a spitwad at anybody. Listen, I'll tell you what. I will talk to Jennifer Tilly because she is a lovely lady. She's a very kind person. She's involved in a lot of things to help other people. And I'm sure that it's nothing personal. It's just that she's busy.
All right. So obviously she hasn't been downloading the show recently. But I'll get on to the next question. This comes from Glance302, and he says, what tell is most often misread by poker players?
Well, that's a great question, and it's it could probably be divided up into areas of the body. For instance, we tend to ignore the shoulders. Over and over, I've asked poker players, well, what about the shoulders? And they seem to just miss this completely. And one of the interesting things we know from the research is that when we're weak, when we lack confidence, Scott, for you, that's your
everything.
Usual hand.
Yeah, absolutely.
That the shoulders tend to rise and come near the ears. And so there's one we often miss. But there's so many of them because, when I first wrote about the nose crinkle, when we sort of crinkle our nose upward like, ew, right? A lot of poker players say, well, I haven't seen that one. And yet Phil Hellmuth does it when he has a rag hand. and it's a very accurate tell. So I would answer it this way. There are many parts of the body that reveal a lot of information, but I think most poker players miss that.
All right, good. This comes from Chicago Joe. He's our fan of the year. And he watches a lot of poker on TV, like a lot of folks does. And this question is kind of framed by the stress of having the TV cameras on you. He wants to know, what are some of the more common tells when a player's stress level is high? And what are some of the more common tells when there's not as much stress?
Well, that's a tough question. How long is this show?
Hey, we got all the time in the world for you today, buddy.
You know, think about the airport, and you know, as they're canceling flights, and you see the lip biting, and you see the compressed lips. Watch Barack Obama. Anytime Joe Biden talks, that's it. Watch the, you know, how his lips disappear, and he starts, you know, just chewing on his lower lip. These are all indicators of distress. There's so many of them. For instance, you'll see a lot more hand to face touching. You'll see a lot of ventilating of the neck, ventilating of the front shirt, and so forth. Very subtle indicators that something's bothering us. Squinting of the eyes, the tucking in of the chin. There's another one that a lot of poker players miss, that when we're confident, our chins tend to stick out a little bit more. And then when we lack confidence, we just slightly tuck it in. And obviously, we're not watching ourselves, so we can't measure it. But fortunately, you guys are playing against them, so you can actually see these behaviors.
No, we just taped a TV show up in Jacksonville, and we actually did some with Chicago, Joe up in Chicago. And for players, have you had much experience with players that are thrust into a TV environment that they're not familiar with? Like all these Jacksonville players, I'm pretty sure none of them had been playing on TV before. And you have to recalibrate your tells, or your analysis of tells on your opponents when that environment changes.
Yeah, I mean, definitely we see the TV factor jump into it. I mean, we certainly saw it, for instance, with the attorneys and the OJ case, where all of a sudden they're acting in ways that you wouldn't see in a normal class or a courtroom. And obviously with in poker, if there's televisions there, it's almost like, okay, well, I have to almost perform for the camera. So it does change the equation. But at the same time, some of the behaviors that you think are being hidden, you can still pick them up. So there's ways around it, but it definitely affects the observation.
Okay, well, this next question is something that I've actually asked you before. I can't remember if it was on the show or just in person or even maybe one of our listeners wrote in. I can't remember, but this comes from Zerbit, and I think I know the answer. I'm interested in hearing suggestions about how to determine whether a tell indicates great strength or a big bluff.
Yeah, well, it's a great question. You know, a lot of times we get very excited, you know, when we are sitting on a monster hand, and yet we could see possibly the same behaviors when we're mastering a bluff. So it's tough. This is part of the game. It's not easy. I think the best way to differentiate is you look for the totality of the tells. So you're looking at a player, and you know, he's been sort of sitting there playing very conservatively. Now he's sitting up. He's leaning forward. More of his hands are, forward of the edge of the table. The orbits of the eyes are fully dilated. You see his mouth is relaxed, the muscles on the face are relaxed, and so forth. And so you say, okay, well, he looks pretty strong. And, you put it into context. Well, when did he start looking this way? Well, it came on the flop. Okay. Now we're starting to put a picture together, and you try to make the best inference from that as you can. But then, you know, as both of you know, then you have a marginal player like me who gets excited when he has a pair of twos, you know, and I get happy feet. I get all giddy. I think I'm going to win not just that hand, but the tournament, because I've got this. And, you know, obviously this is what upsets a lot of major players, who say, how could you have done that? You know, well, you're playing with a marginal player and they're excited about nothing.
Well, I wonder then, is it the physical attributes that you, that the player themselves can't control that would be a deciding factor? Like you mentioned, the, your eyes being fully dilated. Mm-hmm. Those are things that a player can't fake to give off false tells. So are those the things that, that's the determining factor? Okay, well, he could be doing those if he was bluffing, but he can't be doing that with his eyes. He has to have a big hand.
Well, what you'll notice with bluffers is they'll master a couple of things. I was watching one at the Bellagio, and, you know, he's obviously he's read Navarro's book. He's rubbing his neck, and he's, you know, doing this, and he's biting his lips. And, you know, it was all overacting. It was all overacting. And so you have to put that in context and then look at the rest of the body and, you know, see how he reacts to it. So you just have to sort of get a baseline of the individuals and see how they react in different situations and then go from there.
All right, well, that question that we just asked, I think, probably has the biggest crossover of the questions we're going to ask today with your new book. Mm-hmm. What kind of things are folks looking for in the workplace, whether they're talking to their boss or whether they're in negotiations with somebody that they try to tip off that whether somebody's playing the hand too strongly, they're, you know, they're their real hand, not their poker hand, too strongly.
Well, you know, once again, Scott, it's, you know, one of the things that we talked about in the previous books, Read 'em and Reap, was this comfort discomfort that we immediately display how we feel about what we have. And, you know, with poker players, you look at your hold cards and all of a sudden you feel pretty good about them. Flop comes out, you feel even better. You see the same thing in the boardroom. You see it with in litigation. You're reading a contract, and you see things there that please you, and you know the body reflects that. And then you get to an issue that bothers you. You get to a paragraph, and you say, "Oh, I don't like that paragraph." So what do we see? So we see the pursed lips. You know, like they're getting ready to kiss somebody. But where do you see that? You see it in poker. You see it in poker. Sammy Farha, 2003. He's looking at his cards, and you know he pursed his lips. What does that tell us? His perception is this is not what I wanted, and you know so you can rely on it. You can rely on it on in business, and you can rely on it in poker. It's an by the way, that behavior is one of those behaviors that's in the 95 to 96% in accuracy. The lip pursing. In fact, that's one of the things that I want to do with the next book when it comes out is I want to give each tell a certain weight that poker players don't have to do all the research that I did and can say, you know, when I see this, this stands out to be a more valid tell than perhaps something else.
Yeah, that's great because poker players love stats and numbers. That's what they get excited about, so that's perfect.
Yeah, what are some of the more reliable ones besides the pursing lips?
Well, the great question. The
not to kill your future book sales.
No. You know what's interesting is as much as I've lectured, people will still go out and buy the books and so forth because they want to have some reference material. I'll tell you another one that's extremely accurate is the compressed lips. When the lips disappear and we press them together, something's bothering us. And that's one that we really don't control very well because we don't say to the lips, "Hey, I want 3/4 blood flow right now." It just, you know, the brain sort of dictates that. You know, we're talking about the complete, like the orbits of the eyes. When something bothers us, those orbits narrow. And so when things are really bad, then you have that Clint Eastwood look right before he's ready to shoot you in the good, the bad, and the ugly. And that's why, you know, I often say, well, it doesn't matter if you have sunglasses on because the sunglasses don't block out the orbits of the eyes. So you know when they're wide, and then you can see when they're very narrow. So those are extremely accurate there.
Yeah. So you're saying we should all get Jackie O sunglasses that cover the entire face?
You know, I'm having that visual again from earlier. I don't want to go there.
Now, when you say certain tells have a high degree of – one of the big things that I always like to remind folks when you're on the show is that you have to establish that baseline that – you know, you can hear about the perch or the purse lips or things like that, but if that's something a player normally does, it doesn't help. Now, when you say the high percentage, is that ones that
Well, you know, I mean, that's a very good comment, and that is that oftentimes we'll see very repetitive behaviors, which are pacifying behaviors, but that's because the person does it all the time. So he may be chewing gum, does that all the time, or maybe he scratches his hands or plays with his chips. Anything that's repetitive soothes us, so we look for the changes. I think the big things are, number one, is establishing a baseline. And one of the best ways to do it, by the way, is as soon as a table is put together, because people don't assume that you're paying attention. And so you can see some of the more normed behaviors on their part. The other thing that I often find, and I try to teach, and maybe it would be good for the magazine to have a visual of this, is that most people say, well, the face. Well, that's like saying there was an accident in Florida. It's meaningless. I look at the face, and I look at the forehead, then the eyes, then the space between the eyes, the nose, the area between the lip and the nose, the lips, and the muscles around the jaw, and so forth, and then lastly, the chin. When I look at everything that the body can tell us, what the brain is really communicating, and those different sectors, then I have a better read on the person. Most people just say, well, you know, I saw the face, and I think it was telling me this. So I come back and say, well, what did the forehead tell you? What did the lips tell you? Was there tension in the jaws? Where was the chin? The chin? yeah, the chin, again. You know, so it's these things, and that's why when you learn to observe properly, then you can dissect these things and make more informed decisions.
Well, no one sent this question in, but I'm curious because, the governor here in Florida just signed the new poker limits bill, and July 1st we're going to have, quote-unquote, real poker here in Florida. I mean, obviously, people will be playing for more money, so being able to pick up on tells is going to save them a lot. You know, the difference between the pots that are winning now and the pots that are winning then.
Sure.
Are there other things that you think might alter, the law changes will alter in terms of nonverbal?
Well, you know, it's once again, it's one of the things that affects any behavior is, well, what are all the external factors? And one of the external factors is there's more money involved. And when there's more money involved, obviously there is more concern. And when you see that, then that's going to change some of the behaviors. Because as you guys both know, when I play home games, you know, and my buddies, Juan and the other guys, are saying, Joe, it's a dime to call. And I'm sitting there, you know, looking through my little booklet of statistics and so forth, and they keep repeating, Joe, it's a dime to call. That's a lot different than, you know, when there's $20, $30, $50 at stake.
I mean, if people are playing regulars now and assuming that they're going to be playing the same folks again at probably higher stakes, is there stuff they can be doing now to prepare for?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. You know, one of the easiest things that you can do to prepare for poker is, you know, watch some of the games like on YouTube where they have a lot of clips from you know, the final tables and so forth. I still learn from that. And one of the tricks, by the way, is don't slow it down. Don't watch it at regular speed. Speed it up. What happens is all our tells jump out as small caricatures when you speed things up. And the other one is, and I still see this, is how much information poker players give away by not taking care of, you know, their own tells. I you know, people out there still think that it doesn't matter. It absolutely does matter. Talk to any pro and they'll tell you, if they can read you, they can have you.
All right, back to our questions. Zorag writes in, how do you loosen up someone who is using techniques to hide tells, for example, the Navarro perch? You put that all in all caps. Have you copyrighted that term yet?
Well, yeah, I should have copyrighted it. Meanwhile, some bird seller is using it. You know, the Navarro perch is basically, and you've seen Phil Hellmuth use it quite a bit, is you put your elbows on the table and you put your thumbs underneath your chin, and then with your hands in front of your mouth, you pretty much block what people can tell. It's an extremely effective technique. We know from the research that at the table, the less you move, the more you will be ignored, because we have what's called, an not to get too technical, but we have an orientation reflex. And so whoever moves at the table, we will orient towards that person. But if you don't move, if you hold very still, you basically disappear. And quite a few players have adopted this. What was the question again? I apologize. I got carried away.
That's all right. How do you loosen up someone who is using techniques to hide their tells?
The best way is to say things to them, to just question them and say, what do you got? Are you going to hurt me? If I call you, you know, that kind of thing. I think we miss a lot of opportunities by not challenging players and just asking them, is this going to hurt me? Do you want me to call? If I call, you know, what's going to happen? And just seeing how they react to that.
Are you an abusive husband? Have you stolen anything from Walmart recently? One of the questions you told us, I think it was one of our readers too, was show me your thumbs or something like that. It's like the weirdest question to get them to react. So that's one way.
Just to get them to react. Or, you know, talking about a subject that maybe arouses their interest in conversation, and we get them to talk. We know that when we lack confidence, our voice, we have greater speech errors, we have more hesitation, we even speak louder or with a higher pitch. So these are things that Mike Mattisau uses this quite a bit.
Recently in a home game, I made my voice crack to get somebody to call, and he called. I felt him. It was great. He knows who he is. Scott, would you like a Pabst Blue Ribbon? That's going to be the one I want when I want information from him, because he'll react to that easily.
Well, I mean, Joe, I like that advice, but a couple months ago on the show, we got into a discussion about asking players how many chips they have left. Mm-hmm. Not so much because you're interested in the actual information, but you're trying to get a read on him, and I made the case that I never like to answer those questions. If he's asking me how many chips I have, I just remove my hands and let him look. Now, obviously, you can't control the nonverbals, which is what we're looking at, but are there other ways to get at that information from folks that have shown a propensity not to want to play your game and answer your questions?
Well, I mean, I can only go by what I've seen for some of the players. And speaking of that, where you're asking a player and they're sort of, you know, they've got their hands in front of their face and they're reluctant to answer. One of the interesting things is when players are weak, they'll be reluctant to show their face. When they're strong, they don't mind moving their hand, you know, their face from around their hands and saying, you know, either pointing or talking about it. But when they're really reluctant to unveil, at least from what I've seen, they tend to be very weak. So other than challenges, I mean, I've seen some of the things where if the person's next to you, maybe you violate their space a little bit, you lean a little bit to their side and make them uncomfortable and see how they react. But, you know, the problem with that is that begins to affect the experiment. I think just good observation, breaking down the face, they may be able to mask a little bit. As I often say, yes, there are poker faces, but there is no poker body. Somewhere on the body, it will be revealed. The question is, where and can you see it?
Now, if somebody punches you after you ask too many questions, is that a tell?
Well, in the FBI, we call that a clue.
Well, you've got the Navarro perch, but I'm wondering why you didn't come up with the Cosenza cover up and just do this. why do you actually leave some places revealed? Is there a reason why you're leaving the eyes revealed so that you can look at tells, or, you know, because I would just do this and that would cover everything up.
And we would be happy if Chris covered his face up.
Well, I just noticed he got handsomer as he covered full bodied the burka look. I think in part was just from working with players, and they were saying, well, how do I control what people can see? And this was the easiest thing to do, was just to restrict arm movement, because I talked about the fact that our hands tend to move towards the center of the table when we feel strong. We tend to, for instance, we tuck our thumbs underneath our index finger when we're weak. Anything that hides those behaviors, and obviously you want to be able to observe. So, and I mean, I've seen some players where they sort of not fully cover their face, but they'll sort of make a fist with their hands and cover it up so it's almost up to the cheeks. But the most important thing is not to move at the table, because then you virtually sort of disappear.
Okay, this next question, Crackpot One wants to know, what is the best way to hide your own tells when you don't even necessarily know you're giving them off?
Well, I think it goes back to that. I think what we've been talking about is restraining your behavior, making sure that there aren't any loose hands on the table, making sure that people can't see the veins on your neck, hiding your lips. The lips are extremely accurate in revealing how we feel about different things. And even our, you know, I was watching Howard Lederer one time, and I noticed that his elbows, the way he puts his elbows on the table, depended on the strength of his hand. And obviously, the stronger he was, the wider the territorial claim. So you have to be really careful, because you yourself don't know what you're transmitting, but other people will be able to pick up on that.
Now, a lot of people spend a lot of money with golf instructors videotaping their swings, or tennis instructors. You know, not a lot of players have had experience on televised things. And I would think if you brought a video camera to the home game and said, hey, folks, I'm just trying to catch my tells, that they were going to throw you out of the house. Is there any value in, or did you know any other way that maybe folks can videotape themselves and review back? I mean, even if they're playing online, when they're actually playing in a real thing?
Well, you know, I know of at least two people who, since reading some of my books, have actually put a camera on themselves in their home game. And there may be more, but I've only heard from two. And they said they actually caught themselves revealing things that they had no idea. Even if during the game they didn't really show anything utterly significant, they didn't realize that they were so exposed. And that's always a wake-up call. The other thing you can do is have someone who you know say, well, what are you picking up from me? What do you see? But I can tell you, I've been watching poker players now since 04. The majority of people are giving away just too much information, and the pros are just going to take advantage of that.
And I was wondering, it's probably not going to happen, but we do know, like, every poker room manager in the state. Can we get the state tapes of us playing at the table? Like, once those tables are, because security is on you at all times. The tapes are on you. Once those tapes clear the necessary, whatever the statute is or whatever, you know, hey, can I have hours 2 through 7 when I'm at table 4-4 for, you know, and see how I play?
I can't imagine that they would let you do that, because you could request me and I'll request you, and then we'll go to war.
Right. Chris, they're using those tapes for evidentiary purposes in your case.
Very nice.
But, you know,
nice.
I just thought of that. I'm really intrigued by finding a way of video, because that's – is there another way that's more effective of looking at your own tells besides – watching yourself on videotape? I mean, obviously you said ask other folks.
I mean,
but
off the top of my head, I can't think of any. I mean, I know some players who have read some of the books that I've written and have asked their spouses or girlfriends to help them out. I think it's in a very inexpensive way is using the video. Even just try doing it while you're playing with one other person, and even though it's sort of orchestrated, mm-hmm. just look and see what you can reveal. If I can see your hands, if I can see your eyes, if I can see your mouth, if I can see whether you tilt your head, or, for instance, women tend to tilt their head and expose their necks when they're strong. They don't do it when they're weak, but they don't realize they're doing this. So if it just picking up on the fact that, oh, you know, here I'm holding my neck differently, or I'm leaning forward, will tend to. And basically, if you did watch yourself, what would you learn from it? I need to hide these things. I mean, that's the bottom line, is I need to hide these things.
Well, I'll tell you, after the show, I'm going to watch next time I play the whole hand thing. I think that's interesting, you know, because I don't know. I've never really thought about that. And maybe I'll start looking at a particular tell on myself and see whether it comes up. I mean, is there use in that?
Well, you know, the reason that I sort of introduced that into the poker arena was because I used to watch their watch the hands of suspects, and as you presented all the evidence against them, you began to see that their fingers were no longer spread out on the table. They started to withdraw them further and further away. And, you know, I'm looking at different games at Caesars and other places, and I'm seeing the same behavior. And so, well, why not? The person feels threatened. They feel weak. There's no way that they're subconsciously they're going to be showing strength. And so you know, I saw that observation.
A lot of your tells come from research, scientific stuff, experience. I often wonder, are there any tells that you've come across that have nothing to do with any of that, but they're just so obvious, or things that you've seen that aren't rooted in the limbic, you know, what I'm saying is, like, and it all comes back to Rounders, because everything does, you know, the stupid tell at the end when he undoes the Oreo cookies and eats them because he's devouring his opponents, and we know that means he's strong. Has there ever been anything like that you've come across where you're like, this has nothing to do with anything I've ever learned, but clearly this guy has a tell because of this?
Well, you know, I wish you'd asked me that question so I could prepare for it. That's why I'm stuttering here. I'll tell you what has surprised me is how many of the things that I saw in the theater of the interview when I was doing FBI interviews and interrogation work, I also saw in poker. That's what floored me. Oh my gosh, I'm seeing this, I'm seeing that. I thought we only saw that in the interview room, but then it gets back to the basics. What makes us comfortable? What makes us uncomfortable? What makes us confident? What makes us lack confidence? And that's really what we see in poker. And speaking of that, I always tell poker players, you know, your perception of somebody's tells, what you see, is the other opponent's perception of reality. It is not reality. If you see someone and they think that they have a monster hand because, once again, they've got a pair of twos, then you're going to see all the behaviors of comfort and confidence, even though you know that's actually meaningless. So you're reading it right, but for the wrong reason.
All right, Joe, our final question, and this is one that Chris is very interested in because, you know, he's a drinker, not. But Edward M. writes, and he wants to know, are there certain tells that are better to look for in drunk players?
Well, I was going to say, saliva running out the side of the mouth and slurring speech and, you know, the usual stuff. Now, one thing we know with whether they're taking drugs or they're drinking alcohol is that because it's a central nervous system depressant, they're not going to be in as much control as they think they are. They think they are, but they're not. They're going to do silly things. They're going to reveal things that they think there's no way, but it's all there. The other thing we know from the research is they're going to be doing more impulsive things. So, you know, that actually affects, the betting pattern and so forth. So those would be two things. I'm often asked the question, you know, well, should I take like an anti-anxiety drug to play poker? And I say, no. Think of poker as though you're an Olympic athlete. You want to be in good shape. You want to be hydrated. You want to eat well. You want to exercise. You want to go in there because you got to stick it out for 12 hours. And that's the best advice I can give.
All right. Well, any question that gets Joe Navarro to talk about drooling, I think, deserves the grand prize. I don't know about you.
Absolutely. And we'll get to that in just a minute. I got one more question for you on that I want to follow up. You know, unlike Chris, I do enjoy adult beverages every once in a while. And one of the things I notice is if I'm in, like, in a party situation, maybe it's an uncomfortable party, you know, with coworkers or somebody like that, I have a heightened sense of understanding that I've been drinking and I may be saying something that I don't want to be saying. Is that the same in tells? I mean, will you be a little more in tune to how your behavior is, even if you are a little altered?
Yeah, I think that depends on the person. I mean, I've seen people who, you know, are just I just feel a little buzz, you know, and they're being unwrapped from their car because they've hit a wall. I think that's just very personal. I think the for instance, when we're under stress, we understand our bodies less. And I think when we're sedated, we're also understanding our body less. We think we know what's going on, but we actually don't.
All right, Joe, appreciate that. And as Chris mentioned, Edward, you are a grand prize winner of a autographed copy of Louder Than Words, Joe Navarro's new book. He just signed it right here. So,
yeah, not only is it autographed, but it's personalized.
Personalized to Edward. But just so folks don't feel like they're left out, everyone who sent a question today will be getting something off our swag shelf. Either a deck of J Design playing cards, official playing cards of Annie Up, a $10 staking package from getastake.com, or free downloads of the new Poker ID iPhone app. So, folks, I will try to get in touch with you. And that's seven swags on one show.
We were very generous today.
Well, you know, you have to. You got to impress when Joe Navarro's here. We can't let him think we're still so low rent show that he used to come on.
Joe, we're sorry you missed lunch, but we appreciate you taking some time off your busy schedule to check in with us again and catch up with us. Thanks for coming down today.
It's great to be here once more.
All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Up in the world, so that the slow among you, which watch my show because everybody else is working, will benefit from the penultimate knowledge that I have, which can be basically reduced to I'm smart and you're not.
That was Joe Navarro's impression of Glenn Beck.
I was telling Chris, could I get in trouble?
Or I don't know. We recorded it. We're not SEC, so I think you're all right.
The next available exit pointed towards
that's what I'm saying.
Mexico. You see,
that's what I'm saying.
I was
like,
all the way over to Mexico. Mazatlan would have been the next exit.
All right, so we're at Playa del Carmen today, doing the show.